Hey, hola, hello. Hey, it's me, Rob Ryan, jumping into your podcast feed to say, I hope you stick around and enjoy this episode that is queued up between me and my friend, lawyer from Novus Consilium, Juan Conde. Juan was a guest on one of our earliest shows, episode 13, back in early 2021. And today he gets together with me at his suggestion. He pitched me a few weeks ago and said, hey, I really feel like we need to have a conversation around AI governance, regulatory matters, and AI from a legal standpoint to give founders and investors and policymakers the best information and some wider perspectives to consider before they go firing off into building the future of AI for all of us. And I said, man, I can't believe you just came to me with that because we're rebranding the show and you are exactly the type of entrepreneurial thinker that we want to highlight. So I hope you stick around and join us. We dive into public policy issues, the idea of governance as a need, not just government involvement, the good, the bad, the ugly of misalignment and miscommunication around these key issues. But the reality that any type of eventually mainstream technology that's going to be so pervasive in our lives and in our businesses has to be regulated, has to be governed, has to have a set of kind of operating principles that we all agree upon as societies. And so Juan and I jump into that. We lean on his legal expertise from Mexico with his peppered with his experience here in the U.S. living in the Bay Area. And I couldn't be more excited for the episode. So I really hope you enjoy it. Hola, hello, hi, bienvenido, and welcome back or welcome to our new show, Entrepreneurial Thinkers. So today, super stoked because we're kicking off with our first entrepreneurial thinker guest in this new rebranded and formatted show of ours. In this new format, we're going to dive more deeply into the important topics and maybe kind of topics of the day and explore them with the guests who are experts in these areas. Plus, as always, we'll delve into the human side of the stories and journeys of each of our guests as well. And as we're doing today, we're going to do something new by regularly bringing back past guests to help lend their experiences and perspectives on the most important topics that we face today that they happen to work in. And so today, I'm super excited to be joined by my friend, Juan Conde. Juan was actually a guest way back on episode 13 in February of 2021, when we talked about blockchain and smart contracts. Today, he's going to join us to talk about a hot button issue of the day, AI, but we're going to take a little bit different spin on it, right? We're not just going to buy into the hype machine version of AI talk. We're going to dive into governance, legalities, and public policy around this emerging technology. But before we do that, let me remind everybody, in case you didn't happen to listen to episode 13 3 years ago, let me remind everybody a little bit about my friend Juan's background. So Juan's the founding partner and principal partner of the law firm Novus Consilium in Mexico City. He oversees the firm's expansion and public relations efforts. He has for 13 years given legal advice on corporate law, intellectual property, and data protection to fast-growing technology companies, and has handled complex corporate transactions, technology transfers, data protection, compliance, and litigation in industries such as software, e-commerce, advertisement, telecommunications, video games, and interactive digital media. His firm has offices in Mexico City and Guadalajara, and he joins us today from his home in the Bay Area, where he is a proud graduate of the University of California at Berkeley Law School, as well as a board of trustees member of the Mexican Museum in San Francisco. Juan, hola, buddy. I'm so grateful to have this conversation with you.
Hola, Rob. Thank you very much for having me. It is always a pleasure.
That's great. And you're looking good as always, which in our old version of the podcast, when it was audio only, no one would have benefited from your Natalie attired outfit today. But now in the video world, we are. So, hey, I want to get right into it because there's a lot to talk about hypothetically in this topic around AI governance and the legalities of it and the policy issues that people should be focusing on. So let's do that, right? Like you reached out to me, ironically, a few weeks back. You didn't know that we were in the middle of rebranding the podcast and relaunching it as we have, but the timing couldn't have been better. And you suggested at that time that we have a conversation around exactly this. Like you thought it was really important that someone talk about the governance, public policy, and legal issues around AI. And you told me in a text message that you thought that our audience would probably benefit from this kind of a conversation. And you know what? I totally agree. And so I'm super excited for us to have this conversation. But I want to lead it off by you telling us why you believe this topic is so important today.
Well, of course, Rob. I think what I would think of AI right now, or artificial intelligence, or autonomous algorithms, or autonomous technology, or however you want to call it, whether it is machine learning or large language models or whichever version you have, I think it's a very interesting piece of technology. And I mean, we've talked about this a lot, and you know that one of the things that I firmly believe is that we humans are creatures that create technology. We like creating tools. We like using our tools. We like, you know, embedding those tools in our lives. And then our lives are significantly impacted by the tools that we use on our daily basis. And we are about to see a very interesting new tool, you know, or we are seeing these interesting new applications of what, you know, what people broadly would call artificial intelligence. And I think that's very exciting because it's about to happen. And I feel that this is one of the most important things that humanity do. Like, we create tools, yeah. We create amazing tools. We are looking for future stuff, and we like to be optimistic about the future. And I think that coming up with a way to regulate or to govern those tools so that those tools are used for humanity's advantage is one of the greatest challenges of the next century. So, I mean, it's like, why not talk about it? It's like, to me, I think it's very important. And I know that a lot of entrepreneurs are trying to figure out how do they embed AI into their tech products. Right. So this is something that we will be seeing. There's going to be discussions about this in the next few years. So I think it's very good to start, you know, raising the issues.
Totally agree. And again, we were talking just briefly off air before we got started, right? These topics around governance, legalities, regulatory frameworks are things that often early in the hype cycles of any new technology, the purest technologists, right? The dyed-in-the-wool innovators, those people don't want to talk about these types of things. And yet, inevitably, every one of these emerging technologies, as it becomes more mature and it becomes more mainstream into our lives, as you say, has to become prey to some level of regulation and understanding.
Absolutely. I feel that there's a lot of people that roll their eyes when we people that look into governance and regulation and policy like enter the room. And I don't blame them, to be honest. It's like there's we also have to do a little bit of self-reflection and understand and listen to what they're saying, because I feel that they do raise very valid points. But on the other hand, I think that, you know, working towards intelligent ways to actually govern this system is important, because it is not that regulation or law or governance doesn't exist. Like, these technologies do not exist in a vacuum. They are already regulated or impacted by some policy, by some legal stuff, by some regulation, you know, like that's the reality that we have. So sometimes governance people, I think that we are just the boring, realistic people in the room, right, trying to, you know, kind of like make the most out of this, you know, topic.
I'm old enough to, and older than you, I'm old enough to have remembered the days back when I was starting in my tech career, mid-90s, late 90s, right? And people would always say to the young whippersnapper version of me, hey, we need to get a gray hair in the room, right? We need some adult supervision in the room to give you that gray-haired perspective to think about those things, to think about the boring, unsexy things, while the young people were just thinking, you know, pure innovation and how do we disrupt and change. I've got two questions that I thought of while you were speaking there for a second. So let's try and maybe get a little bit more specific, right? So how can, and all this is just our opinions, obviously, right? How can, in your opinion, how can governments and regulatory bodies engage across those sectoral boundaries? So how can they engage with, say, AI researchers or the industry stakeholders or the investors to try to develop or co-develop informed policies?
Well, I think that that's a great question. And I also would like to say that I feel they are interested in doing that. Like, policymakers, regulatory people are interested in reaching out to technology companies. Technology companies have their own departments, you know, the government affairs or public policy affairs teams dealing with this. So definitely there is a conversation happening. And I feel that a very interesting thing that happens is that sometimes that communication is a little bit like obscured by the technicalities of what we're talking about.
Okay.
Like I've always thought that, for example, saying a concept like artificial intelligence is in itself obscure because we are essentially doing something that is called anthropomorphing technology, where, it's like we are defining a tool in human terms, right?
Right,
like it's
right.
We are intelligent, this is intelligent, but this is artificial. It's not natural, right? So it's like having these concepts that are a little bit obscure. It's great for clicks. It's great for sales. It sounds awesome on social media. But sometimes when we need to have these policy discussions, they tend to be difficult to start, right. Because we don't know if we're talking about the same thing. Like, what does intelligence mean? What does artificial mean? Like, isn't there like a better way to actually address what we are doing or regulating? That would be a great start.
So I was going to say, so if I'm hearing you correctly, even we're so early in the cycle of the evolution of all of this, which, as you already alluded to, is kind of just new branding for machine learning, right? And machine-based, computer-based communications. So we're so early in the cycle of this evolution that we don't even have common language yet.
I think it is very interesting to raise the point that AI as a concept is a very broad thing. We can be talking about many, many things. And if I had to define it somehow, I would, with the risk of sounding a little bit too much, and I don't want to take attributions like from, there are technical people who probably know these better than me.
Sure.
But if I would try to give a shot to what I think it's important, I would say that defining these technologies as software that basically without human intervention can analyze an input of data and, give us a output of information in an environment of uncertainty.
Yeah.
And without human intervention, that's the definition that I feel comfortable with. It's not sexy, but I feel comfortable with that definition in order to say, okay, so we're pinpointing what are the elements that we're going to be discussing, right?
Yeah.
Whether it is, there are many techniques to do it, right? Whether it is machine learning, that's a technique, right? The Q networks, that's a technique. Or if we have much more recent with ChatGPT, the LLMs, the large language models, that's another technique. Basically, those are techniques to make machines, output information without human intervention in an environment of uncertainty.
Yeah. It's something you said catches me. And also first, before I say that, we'll make sure we put our disclaimer out there. You're a lawyer, you run a law firm, but nothing we're discussing today is legal advice, right? So we're not giving specific legal advice on any particular issue or topic. If you wanted to discuss these types of issues around the legalities related to your company or your particular applications of these technologies, you can always find one after the show and talk to him in private if appropriate.
Or hire a lawyer that is licensed to practice in the country or the jurisdiction that your company is.
Yes. Today we'll get to your background a little bit more to kind of inform this conversation. But I just wanted to, I just thought to put that out there for everybody as well. So one of the interesting things you just said, to get back to that for a second, is I think if we had not been so desperately seeking kind of the umbrella marketing terminology, like let's give it a cool, sexy name, AI, artificial intelligence, and let's just put everything under that, I think we actually really are talking about multiple different products, right? We're, like you said.
It could be the case. We're talking about different techniques, different applications, right? Different products. And I feel that to answer your question at the beginning, what can policymakers do to start engaging in this is, okay, start reaching out to the technical people to actually understand, right? I see sometimes people who want to move for regulation and, pass a law to regulate artificial intelligence. And it's only, like you could even say that it's a legislative or regulatory race to earn likes. You know, it's all this congressperson is very cool because they are legislating artificial intelligence. And sometimes, you know, that to me, like, I mean, it's like those efforts, like with all due respect, I think that some of them lack this initial stage, which is engaging and talking to people within the private sector or yeah. with universities or policy groups. But there's many people around doing very important work to actually understand what is it that we are kind of like want to regulate. And please note that when I say regulation, this is also an obscure term because a lot of people think of legal regulation, a statute by Congress, or, you know, whatever code by my local government. And usually there's this book that probably you know about it. The book is called Code by Dr. Lawrence Lessig.
Okay.
He's a lawyer and a brilliant writer and technologist. And he writes in his book Code that there are many ways to govern or to regulate information systems. And law is only one of them. And in my opinion, it should be the last one, right? There are many other ways to regulate or to govern, right? He uses the word regulate. I like using the word governance.
Sure.
Because then it encompasses law, but it can also encompass, you know, market situations, or it can also encompass indirect regulation like taxes or, you know, like for certain kind of stuff. And I know that I said the T word, I'm sorry, you know, I'm not suggesting that, but it's just an example of how this can happen. And Lawrence Lessig said, like, well, there's a very efficient way to regulate this via code, right? Like, sure. You know, source code it's basically architectural governance. So also to make that point, which is another example on how to avoid obscureness around the conversation, is, well, we're not only talking about legal stuff. We're not talking about, let's prohibit this product. And if you sell this product, you're going to prison. We're not suggesting that when we talk about governance. We are suggesting a toolbox of different approaches. If you
will. It's funny. I had another question here that you kind of already have hit on. And so I'll twist it into a statement, right? So policymakers and industry participants, let's just use those two headers, right? They have an opportunity to strike a balance now at this stage, at this early, like seed infantile level stage between the fostering of innovation and then ensuring kind of responsible and ethical use. And I think if I heard you correctly, and I tend to agree with what I heard you say, right, is there's this gold rush mentality right now that everybody involved, including the legislatures on one side or the lawyers on another side or the venture capitalists and the innovators and founders on the other side, local governments, like federal governments, right? Everybody is in this kind of like fevered pitch, gold rush mentality to get to some spot on the ground and stake their place or their claim, so to speak.
It sort of sounds like it, yes.
Right? And in that rush, they haven't even like really talked among themselves to see what they're going to do with the land once they get there, right? And so the point that I keep hearing you come back to, which again, as we're self-deprecatingly teasing each other at the opening of the show about how the we've pitted ourselves against the pure innovators. But in truth, I think if you really listen to what we're starting to say here, is that this right now is the moment for everybody to be able to get together and self-govern. Right. And self-regulate or co-govern, right? Like collaboratively across the different sectors. And you know, selfish plug, the thesis underneath this newly rebranded show, Entrepreneurial Thinkers, is that we want to talk with people across all sectors of our entrepreneurial societies, right? Because I fundamentally believe that it's not just a world of just pure entrepreneurs, right? But that the world needs entrepreneurial thinkers in government, in law, in science, in medicine, in technology, and all, you know. And so I think that's what I'm hearing you say. You're not just the lawyer sitting here like crying out for legal statutes and regulation. You're actually strongly encouraging all the players to get together and spend quality time talking with each other about exactly what it is that they're each and or that we're all going towards.
Exactly. I mean, I do a lot of work as a lawyer in Mexico. I do for technology companies. Like, and I've been doing the work for probably like working on the legal sector, like probably over 15 years, but, you know, as part of my law firm, like around 13 years. And the work that I usually do advising technology companies under Mexican law is in most ways is trying to help them find a way to actually, you know, make their products compliant without all the hassle of, no, you cannot do it because this right. is so new, this is so whatever. But the thing is that also I take my hat as a lawyer, and I also end up doing a lot of work, which is non-legal work, which is advocacy work in front of policymakers, regulatory agencies and stuff, and basically saying, you know, like, let's start a conversation. Like, I'm not saying like there is naturally a tension of innovation against the law. I don't like I see the tension arising naturally, although I don't think it should be the way that we should frame the conversation, just like be mindful about that tension that exists. But I feel that we can collaborate. We have plenty of tools to actually create a framework of governance that is not going to trample innovation, that it's not going to destroy the innovative capacity yeah. of humanity, but also that it's going to protect us as humanity from our own tools, which also probably thinks like an important thing to do. So I think that we can strike a balance.
Yeah, no, some smart, as you, again, self-governing limitations, right? Limits, and that word limitation doesn't have to have like an overtly negative connotation, right? It's like a governor on your car, right? I mean, like it's to keep you from going excessively speedy so that you don't damage and hurt yourself, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. In that sense, and that's a funny turn of phrase that I just stumbled into, probably because this next question was sitting on my mind. So you've talked about a whole bunch of different kind of the broad applications and ideas. We have mentioned ChatGPT, large language models, other kind of specific things. I've got two that are kind of particular to the Bay Area right now where you live that I would love to see if we could be more specific on. So do you believe, first of all, so it's a yes, no, like, do you think there is? And then if you do think there is, like maybe we could play with some possibilities of what they could be or why they could be valuable. But like, do you believe there's a need for some specialized or particular regulatory frameworks around such things, AI applications and uses such as autonomous vehicles, which is obviously a big topic in the Bay Area all the time right now, right? Or even like facial recognition technology. So two parts of the question. Do you believe there is some specialized needs for regulatory frameworks there? And then if you do, what might some of them be?
Yeah. So to answer the first question, mostly yes, right? And then moving on to the second question, I would say that it's important to analyze the impact or the harms that this technology have the potential to create in order to address interesting regulation. There are many people that have done this work before me, right? So there are many universities and many companies launching their AI, responsible AI policies. The European Union has started, you know, like drafting some legal regulations on this. It's more generalized. It's not just for autonomous vehicles or just for, but it's like a generalized legislation that would kind of like contemplate some aspects that could be relevant on this. I think personally that we have a set of principles that probably we should be mindful of. And I can you know, discuss about them, but I will mention them briefly. The first one, which I think it's very important, is data governance, is how the system applies to companies that collect personal information or information in general or data to train these products, to train right. the algorithms. So data governance is very important. Or for example, record keeping, right? Like logging, like getting all the logs of how the what the interaction with the technology is, so that in case if there's an accident, like speaking about autonomous vehicles, imagine there's a terrible accident, which can happen, maybe we will need to have, you know, certain logs to understand how the vehicle acted, right? Or how the software instructed the hardware to actually move. So logs are important. I think transparency is important. I think that telling people that they're using AI products is important so that we can make informed decisions. I think that the most important probably for me is human oversight, right? Mm. I don't think that, for example, in facial recognition, because there have been cases in which there has been people misidentified with facial recognition. And they face, for example, criminal prosecution, which is, you know, major words, right?
Right.
Be subjected to the hassle of maybe you're completely innocent and that's right. But imagine being like 1 year or 2 years into a prosecution process, like the levels of anxiety, the level, you know, who's going to give you your sleepless night? And eventually, at some point, probably the prosecution, not acting maliciously, but at the end of the process, they will tell you probably, I'm so sorry. You know, it's
right.
Like, oops. Like, yeah. So, for example, human oversight, because we need to be able to appeal to a human to review the decision. I strongly believe that the excuse of the machine said, or the machine did it, or the software said it, or the system said it, I don't think it should be a valid legal defense.
Yeah.
So these are principles that I think that we see being repeated in many, many, many frameworks, guidelines, like the White House issued the AI governance guidelines two years ago. We see some of these principles there. They're one of my favorites are the ethical principles of the Algorithmic Justice League. Amazing. Like, you know, it's like they bring right. some of these principles to the table. So in as a summary, I think that those principles are important.
No, those are, you hit on so many of them, and thank you for being so specific. But I love that you also tied it back to some kind of macro efforts that have already been made, right? And I too remember when the White House announced that policy paper, so to speak, right? And of course, the derision from certain segments of the industry and society that just push back on it. And my take on it, maybe Uncle Rob, reasonable-minded person at my age, was like, hey, you got to start somewhere, right? I mean, we have to start with, as you say, kind of a basic set of operating principles, a framework. That is the first steps towards governance. And again, governance doesn't have to pit like the government against private sector. Governance is a different word that has a different meaning, and it can be collaboratively built. Yeah, that's awesome. Really insightful. I want to inject some personal stuff here, because you tipped at just a minute ago in describing yourself in one of your answers. But how'd you get into the law? Like, why the law for you? Like, why'd you decide way back when? Why'd you decide to become an attorney?
So here's the thing. My family is a family of lawyers.
Okay, there we go.
I am probably the seventh generation lawyer in my family. And that is a double-edged sword, right? Because some people that have this background either hate it and never become lawyers. Some people love it. I was fortunate enough to love this career. And, you know, like I always knew that I was going to become a lawyer. And I went to law school in Mexico. I'm licensed to practice law in Mexico. I went to law school also in California. I am not yet licensed to practice law in California, but, you know, I practice law in Mexico. And I always knew that I wanted because of that.
That's awesome.
And you know, like I also knew very early on that I liked computers.
Okay.
That's why I ended up in software law.
So you're a little born and bred technologist / future lawyer.
Yeah, I guess so. Because I think that growing up, I was always like an early adopter. I wanted to, you know, I was very much impressed about technological developments, like having my first computer when I was 12 years old. Yeah. It was probably this, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, a little bit like it was a Hewlett Packard with the speakers, you know,
sure.
hanging on each side of the, you know, that was one.
I remember those.
I don't know, like it was only something that genuinely, you know, called to me.
That's awesome. How did you decide to apply? You don't just decide to go to Berkeley Law School and then go. Like, how did you apply to Berkeley? And then I'm curious, I think you and I've talked about this before. Were you one of the first students from Mexico or early generation of students from Mexico in the Berkeley Law School?
I mean, I don't think so, to be honest.
No? Okay.
I think that, I mean, I was there doing my LLM in 2014. And I'm pretty sure that before me, there were many people from Mexico like attending
okay.
the program. mostly because, I mean, the LLM program in Berkeley, it's very well renowned around the world.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that people from Mexico applied and got into it because there's a lot of talent in Mexico's legal industry. But I decided to go to Berkeley mostly because of two reasons. First of all, because I really, really don't like the cold. So if I had to go to school in the U.S., it wasn't going to be in Chicago or it wasn't going to be Harvard.
Right.
It wasn't going to be there, you know?
No Midwest or Northeast.
No shade to them. Like, you know,
no, congrats, no, great, Kansas for, great cities, great law schools, but no.
Congrats Kansas City for winning the Super Bowl. But, you know, it's like, that, I'm just joking with that reason. My real reason is because since very early on in my law firm in Mexico, I represented the technology companies. One of my very first clients was a company that basically is in the electronic invoicing sector. And if you have ever done business with Mexico, you know that electronic invoices in Mexico are a big thing.
Yeah.
And to issue them, the company has to be previously authorized by the Mexican government. And it's a difficult process. So that was one of my very first clients. We helped them get the authorization, but we also helped them develop their privacy policies, their terms and conditions, like, you know, very early on. And I became like in love with the work. And I knew that Berkeley had a great program for that.
Okay.
So I decided to go for it. And yeah. I was lucky enough to get accepted.
And it suits you on many levels, right? But you love living in the Bay Area. I know that. We've talked about, I saw you up there in the summer of 2022 on campus at Berkeley. We met with some young aspiring entrepreneurial students from Mexico that we had brought. So I know you love the area, and it ties it all together, right? It's the technological innovation hub of the world. It's the mecca for that, so to speak. It's again now the mecca for everything AI, right, is being innovated and ideated there in the Bay Area. And it's obviously Go Bears. It's a beautiful, amazing top class school and a great law school. So good for you. Question, because of, again, maybe this is a very specific to you because of your unique background. And again, disclaimer, not asking you for legal advice in the US, but just the context of the fact that you do traverse both sides of the border. Do you see, or what role do you see international cooperation playing in the shaping of AI governance and policies on maybe a regional or a global scale?
Yeah, I think that at some point we will need to have some sort of international understanding about how this governance system should be applied. We have seen this happen with other areas. Like, to be honest, I don't think it's, for example, it's happening with data protection. If probably you've heard about the GDPR, this famous European law, you know, that regulates how companies can collect and process personal information.
Kind of the gold standard, is it not?
It has become the gold standard in a way. Thank you for disclaiming that this is not legal advice, but California has its own law, the CCPA, right? Okay. Some other states within the US have certain privacy laws that in a way bring some elements that we see on GDPR. We see a little bit of consent. We see a little bit of information. We see a little bit of lawful processing. You know, some of the certain things. If you go through Latin America, you know, like I was helping a client to develop fully compliant privacy policies for 6 countries in Latin America. So if you go to Colombia, if you go to Chile, to Brazil, they usually have a law that touches very similarly in these issues. So the world has become harmonized in a way when it comes to data protection. I feel this is going to happen at some level with some of the principles of AI if companies want to sell their products in a global market. Like, that's bound to happen from the company perspective.
That makes sense.
It also may happen that some states will regulate very unique issues, specific issues. And that might vary a little bit between, you know, state-by-state basis.
Sure. No, that seems to make sense. I want to go back to something you said earlier, because it touches on this idea of accountability and transparency, but really accountability. So I think about this as we're sitting here, but I've also been thinking about this recently. If some company, pick your technology company and put it in the blank, right? So I won't pick on any particular company. Decided that they wanted to train their large language models or their AI tools to do certain things, that they could say, well, you know what, the best mechanism for us to do that is to gather up and ingest every podcast that's ever been created, right? That's listed on Spotify presently, or the last 100 episodes of every podcast that's listed on Spotify. And they go back and they ingest those, you know, millions and millions of tens of millions of podcast episodes. And mine is one of them. They're essentially creating their product and their knowledge base. And then the responsiveness and appropriateness of that responsiveness of that tool on my intellectual property. And I say that for the YouTube viewers, I say that in air quotes for the people listening in audio, I'm air quoting, right? And that to me is a really interesting and undetermined slippery slope. Like, what do you, again, not giving legal advice, but like, what does the lawyer in you think about that point of view?
That's a great example, because it's a good segue to say that we don't need this global AI law to have certain legal principles applicable to what already is happening right now. And I think that, you know, it's very evident that some of the key issues and one of the greatest challenges of companies that we are seeing companies have when they scrape and collect data is that not all data is created equal, unfortunately. And I have been thinking about this concept of data with legal significance. There is data that has legal significance and that you have to hire an attorney to help you understand what is the legal significance of that piece of data that you are collecting. It might very well be that it's a copyrighted podcast. Right. So then the question arises, and I would love to see, maybe there's a case going on around in any federal court in the US. I don't know. It would be good to know. But then the issue is whether scraping or getting copyrighted material to train algorithms is in itself a copyright violation.
Yeah.
You know, do they need your authorization to train the data? That's something right. that should be interesting. I think Creative Commons issued like a primer on how to understand Creative Commons licenses under the context of, you know, feeding algorithms, which I think it was brilliant.
I feel like it was, to your question, rhetorical though it was, about is there a legal case out there? I feel like I was, I'd been on an episode of the podcast with Kara Swisher, either her On with Kara Swisher show or the Pivot show that she does with Scott Galloway. And this was, oh gosh, middle of last year, 2023. And they were interviewing, I think it was like Barry Diller, who himself is a colorful character in the world of technology and media and whatnot. But and he had this almost at the time, it struck me as I was on my walk listening to this podcast, because the question posed to him was, right, is AI going to change the world, right? Is it going to eat everything? And is it going to make creative content and Hollywood and, you know, books and everything irrelevant, right? Because it's just, who needs humans? We're just going to create everything. and they were very like seriously concerned and kind of trying to delve into it. And he had this kind of laissez-faire kind of flip response. And he says, yeah, no, not until it's all resolved after I fight it out with them, the AI companies, the tech companies, fight it out with them in court. And the response was like, wait, what? Right. And he says, yeah, he says, like, we're worrying about nothing. It's much ado about nothing at this stage. Like, they're going to try and innovate what they're going to try and do without any impediments or regulatory governance. Right. And they're going to go as far as they can go. And then eventually some of us, enough of us who have significant libraries of or stores of data, information, past articles, content, shows, whatever it might be that is data, right? We're just going to stand up one day and go like, hey, yeah, no, Microsoft, Google, OpenAI, whoever you are, like, no, you don't get to use that. I did a search on ChatGPT and that response is clearly based on my content, my intellectual property. Like, I'm suing you.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to pay me for the rights to get to that information. And or so to your point, like, if you're going to scrape, basically right now, everything to this point has just been like an open scraping of the web, so to speak, by the AI driven companies. And there are apparently some smart people out there who are starting to say, like, oh no, wait a minute.
Well, I think that's going to be a very valid reason. Also, technology companies with, you know, they might also have a very valid defenses to that, you know? So it's going to be a very interesting sort of litigation. But so that's the legal part, which is, you know, for me, exciting. I don't know if for anyone else, but I really enjoy that part. But it doesn't have to go there, right? Like, we can, for example, as a matter of self-governance, or as a matter of, let's say that the Creative Commons Collective, for example, comes up with a marvelous idea on how to actually let people like you, Rob, that have a lot of content, to make the decision and say, like, you know what, I would like to feed some of these algorithms. So if I am the owner of the copyright, why shouldn't I be able to choose if I want to do it? And maybe without hiring a lawyer, have a ready-made license so that I can make, you know,
right.
And we can embed that license in the code so that whenever you use certain platform and you upload the content that you want to give license to, it's embedded in the code. And then we have some execution scripts that say how the license should be executed and interpreted. Like, there are many ways in which the industry and, you know, third parties and universities and think tanks and regulators can come together to say, like, you know what, like, maybe it's good to feed certain algorithms for certain ways. Maybe this is a valuable technology. How do we do it in a way that it's not, you know, destroying the rights of individual podcast makers, which is also very valid, you know, your intellectual property.
Yeah, no, I aside from my own self-interest in this example, I'm down with this. With this approach, right? I mean, I've said from the beginning, and I get poo-pooed by my, you know, purist technology friends when I say stuff like I'm about to say, but, you know, I think AI, not to minimize it or mitigate it, in fact, it's a compliment. I think AI is just, it's like the internet, right? It's a utilitarian technology, a tool or sets of tools with a whole subset of functionality and features and potential applications that will probably go into the tens of millions that will reshape how we interact and communicate and learn and you know, exist as a society. But it's not here to replace us. I've never believed in that. Like, I've never gone to that far extreme example. In fact, someone did a quote the other day. I might misattribute this. I want to say it was Arianna Huffington, I think it was. And she said something like, AI isn't here to help computers become more human, but to help, like, humans become more capable or more, you know, robust kind of thing, right? And that's what I view it as. I view it as like a net positive add. We use ChatGPT as a mechanism to help us preempt scripting for the podcast. We use ChatGPT as a mechanism, as a writer's prompt, to write, like, help fill the blank page with some ideas, which then get edited out or deleted or refined or changed to become the human versions of those things. Because as of right now, that's what it's useful for. But to the Barry Diller example, and I'll have to reference that, I'll go find the link and I'll put it in the show notes for everybody. But that's probably on the grander scale, right? That's probably the future, right? And that's where all these interests will meet, right? There are societal interests that, hey, if you don't like it, sorry, the law is a valuable tool in our societal structure, right? So there's legal ramifications, there's political policymaking realities, there's innovation needs and realities, there's economic interests. You know, I think the theme that I'm taking away from your commentary today is just that we have an opportunity still, or right now, to pull the reins back on the horses on the gold rush trail. And just get ourselves into more rooms around more round tables where all the different stakeholders are talking about these things to find the common language and then to find the common ground around how to, again, regulation is not a bad word, right? How to regulate the existence of all of these things, maybe in a way that we didn't necessarily do with the internet 1.0, where we just kind of said, like, the government created it, turned it over to the private sector and said, like, go for it. Right. And we wound up with all the good and the bad, but maybe more bad than we expected, or maybe more bad than we had to. Maybe this time around we could be better.
I mean, I think that the way the internet developed was actually very interesting. And to quote again Lawrence Lessig, I think that he writes his book when the internet is kind of like this novel thing. Right. So his book is written about how to govern the internet, And the idea is, which I agree, is that governance is not one thing. It's not the right. government coming with the hammer and saying, you don't do this. Because that would be very inefficient, in my opinion. It's how do we look, and I guess that what I'm thinking at the moment is how do we open this toolbox called governance? How do we pick up different tools? It can be corporate policies. I mean, some companies issue their corporate policies. That's amazing. Some of them are very well made. So corporate policies. Also universities. What are universities? What are researchers saying about this? Because sometimes corporations need to be called out. And it's a good thing for a corporation to sit on the table with researchers to strengthen their own corporate policies. I don't think that should not be warranted, right? Or maybe we take off the code tool that we have and we start embedding certain regulations, certain governance pieces in the products. For example, let's talk about privacy by design, for example, which is an interesting topic that many companies are navigating towards. So the way that I like seeing this issue is like governance is a toolbox. We have many tools inside. Let's use all of them, but you wouldn't kill a fly with a cannonball. You know, it's like it doesn't make any sense to, you know, kill a fly with a cannonball. So let's use the right tool in order to help two things, help companies to develop the product and help users to use the product in the most positive sense.
Yeah, no, it's interesting too. I tie this all back in a funny unintended segue here. It sounds like if done properly at some level, you could use something that we talked about 3 years ago on episode 13, the blockchain, right? And smart contracts. You could use those technologies, that software, essentially to kind of verify and ensure the ownership of either certain intellectual property or certain data, and then what gets used or not used, what gets scraped or not scraped, right, to protect the interests of both sides, et cetera. So there's an interesting conflagration of, you know, nowadays what we do is we're just like, it's all AI. Oh, we forgot about blockchain. I thought that was the hot thing, right? The truth is all these things become like useful industrial middleware.
It is a collection of our tools. Right. I love, for example, this concept of, that I already mentioned, the privacy by design, because this concept was created by the European Union legislation, by GDPR. And basically what they say is like, these are the privacy obligations. These are the data protection obligations. And you know what? Companies, you are required to embed these privacy protections in your products. And that is what we call privacy by design. That's a great thing. It's like, you know what? Like, this is the regulation. You make sure that it is on your source code and let's be happy about it, because then code is the best executioner of regulation.
It's true.
Be a case. So in a sense, I guess that my view on this would be, first, let's not go with obscure concepts. Let's talk about, you know, like, it's good if we want to post something and get likes, use whatever concept you want. But if we are going to engage in regulation, in policy, in governance, let's do it with a very clear sense of what we're talking about. Yeah. And then let us not forget that we have a lot of tools and we shouldn't be using the hammer, right? Yeah. When maybe we can use a more gentle one first.
No, I agree. Yeah, I 100% agree. We're going to have a closing segment here. One of the things that I told you before we started in this new iteration of our show, Entrepreneurial Thinkers, we're very intentionally going to try and make sure that we provide some like specific, more actionable information or knowledge, right? So I'd love to try this out, kind of this closing segment where I'd love for us to, and I'm going to ask you for three examples or three ideas, but for like kind of three of our different personas that are listening to us all the time, right? So first question is going to be around founders, second one maybe around investors, third one maybe around to close out around policymakers. So first question, right? So in your opinion, what would three kind of pressing AI governance issues be that founders who are building companies today should keep front of mind? Three things that they should keep front of mind every day as a young founder.
So the first one is that they should be alert of what is going on with all the privacy governance frameworks and the AI, governance frameworks. Like, just, you know, stay tuned on social media, like on LinkedIn, on Twitter. Like, just like, do not think this is, you know, like do not think that this is does not make sense. So stay alert. That's the first one.
Okay.
Another one would be like, remember that just because there is no AI law, that doesn't mean that your product is free of any legal significance. So
that's a great reminder, founders.
Hire an attorney of your confidence and trust that's, you know, that knows about software to deal with this. So yeah. Those would be my 2 points. Like, stay alert, see how the tides are moving, and, you know, have proper, you know, legal impact assessment or regulatory impact assessment. It costs a little bit of money, so budget for it, you know, before you go out and raise your Series C or Series A or whatnot. So be mindful about it. That would be for entrepreneurs. These things matters and are going to start matter way more.
You can't just throw AI on your website and tell everybody that that's what you are. You gotta be mindful of these things going forward. All right. So second group, if you were sitting in front of a room full of, it could be Mexican venture capitalists or it could be American venture capitalists, like, what would be the three most pressing AI governance issues that investors should be considering when potentially investing in companies that are saying that they are AI companies?
So the first of all, I would say, is don't roll your eyes when somebody brings up the governance conversation. I know it's expensive. I know it's not, it feels slow. I know that you would be rather putting your dollars into something that has more evident return, or at least more immediate return. But try to, you know, don't roll your eyes. Try to be open-minded when you enter into these conversations. And the second one is that I don't know how full people do their due diligences. I'm pretty sure that some investors do very full analysis, some investors don't, to each its own. But just remember that at some point, you want to see if the company has a regulatory impact assessment. And it doesn't have to be done by a lawyer. You know, it's like, it's not, I don't think that an impact assessment is legal work by definition. It's not, it does not involve legal advice. It does not involve drafting legal significant documents. It does not involve all of that. It's just, you know, somebody doing a research about what the regulations say to try to pinpoint, you know, it can be done by product people. So maybe you can even have your product people to do that, or your junior venture partners, you know, like do some regulatory analysis or ask for an impact assessment. And if you have questions, like, run that with a lawyer, you know, but just making the impact assessment does not necessarily has to be done by an attorney.
Yeah.
So it's like, don't roll your eyes and be careful about regulatory impact assessments. I think that the impact assessments are valuable documents for investors, and I don't see them asking for them.
No, I like that one, because I mean, to me, I wouldn't think about it any differently than I would think about a market assessment or a competitive analysis, right? I mean, if anything, it would show as mature a level of maturity and thoughtfulness in the founding team that they were thinking far enough ahead in the chess game of their business that they would be anticipating, not having to necessarily address an answer for, but like anticipating regulatory realities and or legal implications of what it is that they're trying to do for themselves, their shareholders, and for their users.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, it doesn't have to be like, I understand that not a lot of people have a couple of, you know, tens of thousands of dollars to pay a reputable law firm to do, you know, like a legal analysis. And, you know, it doesn't have to be the legal analysis. It just has to be an impact assessment done by product people that then you can run up with a lawyer or with your general counsel or whomever if you need in the future. But at least it shows that the company at least knows that there's something going on and happening.
No, I would agree. All right. So last category, let's say you and I are at lunch at my favorite place there on campus at Berkeley, and you're the known lawyer in Mexico. I'm the generalist storyteller who has his fingers in all this technology stuff. And we invite to lunch a professor of AI, of technology research. And we invite to lunch some local state representative from the California State Assembly. And these people are sitting there and they're literally like, we don't understand anything about AI. Like, to those people, to the true kind of policymakers, and this is a little twist, so not the issues, that what do you think the two or three biggest ethical considerations should be for those people? What would we tell them over lunch that they should be thinking about as they try to understand this space?
Right. So when it comes to ethical considerations, I would definitely say that there are two main things. The first one is be careful about the data that you use to train the tools, like in the research sector. Definitely personal data is important because it has real life consequences, and you wouldn't experiment on humans. That would be unethical. So maybe, you know, try to frame your use of personal information within that ethical frame for researching. For policymakers, I would definitely try to suggest for them to ask companies, ask researchers to explain that, like to explain the things like if they were 5 years old. I love that movie, Philadelphia, where Denzel Washington portrays a brilliant attorney that says, explain to me like if I was 5 years old. No shame on that. You know, it's like, these are complicated stuff. It's like, you know, make it as plain, as simple as possible. Point me towards good literature that I can read so that I can understand better. And a general one to all the people listening, there is a high value, I think, right now for people who can sort of like speak both languages, to bridge the conversation between the technical people and the policy people, that understand what the policy people want and what the researching people need, you know?
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And by the way, I know you're not a technologist, and you didn't mean to refer to yourself, but conversations like this are exactly intended to do that, right? Is we're trying to contribute to the dialogue,
right,
and contribute to the conversation. And I got to say, aside from my selfish motivation of thanking you for helping us kickstart this new era, very Taylor Swift-like comment, right? Or this new era of our podcast with entrepreneurial thinkers like you. You are a world-class entrepreneurial thinker.
Thank you.
You are not a technology company founder / entrepreneur in the purest sense. I'm grateful. I love this conversation. Wisdom, right? Depth, specificity, everything that I've always come to expect from you. So I'm really, really grateful. So thank you for taking the time to spend with us today. And before we go, as we always like to do, make sure that the people who listen can follow or find you. How can we find or follow you or the firm on social media or on the web? Where can we find you?
Well, thank you. You can always find me on LinkedIn. I'm there as Juan Conde. You can also find me on Twitter. I'm there as Lawyer Count. I haven't been tweeting a lot lately, but you can find me there and we can start. Like, I'm very happy to open conversations. And just very quickly to thank you for also opening the doors of your projects, Rob. I am very thankful for that.
Always, no, always. And if listening in Mexico and interested or needing or curious to find you guys or your partners in Mexico to see if the firm can be helpful, how can we find the firm on the web?
Absolutely. Well, the website of the firm is Novus, NOVUS.law. There you can find all the information and also send us a message in case you are interested. And for our U.S. friends, we also, like, we do Mexican law, but we also work with companies from all over the world who want to go to Mexico and Latin America, or, you know, like, have cross-border things.
You are literally the bridge builders. That's awesome. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you very much, Rob. Have a great day.
And as always, we thank you so much for listening. Today's show was recorded in Los Angeles and produced by Deanna Bernal in Mexico City. You can always find, like, follow, subscribe, and share our show on Spotify, Apple, or via any popular podcasting platform. As well as find the new video version of our show now available on our YouTube channel at Entrepreneurial Thinkers. And as always, you can follow along our various social media platforms for fun and informative clips and content at Entrepreneurial Thinkers on most platforms. And if you'd like to connect with me, your host, You can find me at I Am Rob Ryan on just about any social media platform. Gracias, and thank you.